And now, broadcasting from their secret hideout, Checkpoint XP presents a show about comic books and superheroes. Robbie Landis, Joe Sloan, The Other Identity.
It's a comic, a movie. No, it's a podcast. It's The Other Identity. Welcome to the next issue, ladies and gentlemen. If you're new, we're a show about comic culture from Checkpoint XP. From Checkpoint XP, X-Peak, the peak of Checkpoint stuff.
Look at you, professional.
Yeah, that's right.
You made that work.
I sure did. And we are here each week at noon Eastern time on twitch.tv/CheckpointXP if you happen to be catching us on the podcast or over on YouTube. Now, if you want to catch us live, we do talk about the world of comics at large. And again, that's twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. Now, before we get into today's show, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that we don't just do comics. Checkpoint XP is the nation's first syndicated talk show dedicated entirely to esports and gaming. You can find out more over at checkpointxp.com, our brand new website, which you should totally check out, and be sure to sign up for the newsletter that we're going to be sending out here very, very soon. You can also follow us on all of our social medias. That's Checkpoint XP on Twitter, Facebook, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. From our flagship show to the daily shows, we also have Low Team Damage, an Overwatch talk show, Checkpoint 76 for Fallout 76, and tons of other content for every type of gamer, including the return of Dungeons & Dragons on Monday, which is going very well. But enough of that. I am, of course, joined by my co-host, partner in crime, Joe Sloan. Joe,
hey,
how's
man.
It going?
Oh, it's going. I think every inch of my body is sore and in pain right now. The entire weekend was dedicated to moving, painting, lifting, cleaning. It was a nightmare.
I have no quippy comeback for that, so I'm just going to say, sorry, buddy, but it's all going to be worth it.
Yeah, you're right. It'll all be worth it in the end. I'm excited for today's episode. I know you were really, really looking forward to talking about All-Star Superman.
Yeah, like, I was.
You've shared that misery with me. I've gotten to experience it now. I shared it with Sarah. We're trying to share it with Nate. No, He's being very resistant to watching it for reasons I can't figure out.
After saying once, oh, you know what you guys talking about? I kind of want to watch to see how bad it is.
Yeah, I know.
And then I bring it over for him and he's like, nah.
So we were going to talk about that today, but unfortunately over the weekend we got the new episode or the new season of The Punisher. I guess not unfortunately. It's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about The Punisher today. As far as spoilers go, I think we're going to keep the discussion kind of around the first couple episodes of the season and just talking about it in general rather than the whole season.
One thing that I'd like to do is talk about season one a little bit first, because obviously the Marvel Netflix shows, all of them minus Iron Fist, are something really special. Like they did amazing jobs with them.
Right.
In most cases, season two for each of them, whether it's Daredevil, Jessica Jones, I guess some people are. Luke Cage was probably better than what the first season was, but in most cases, I feel like the second season tends to drop off a little bit for some people, right? I personally don't think that was the case with Jessica Jones or with The Punisher. But one of the things that we've sort of applauded The Punisher for before, and then this is obviously entirely on Marvel and Netflix, is this. There's no other Punisher that's like this. They did with Punisher what they should have done with Iron Fist, and they allowed him to evolve. They allowed themselves to change him to be able to fit better into our world, right? Has there ever been a Punisher that you've actually sympathized with before?
No. I mean, Punisher has always been one of my least favorite Marvel superheroes, and I put superheroes in quotation marks because
he's just a dude with guns
and he's a bit of an asshole most of the time. So I've never been a big fan of the Punisher. I've never found his story that interesting, kind of for the same reasons that like it's like Batman with all the intrigue taken away. You know, Batman has his line that he doesn't cross, and that's kind of, and him having to constantly wrestle with that line is what makes him interesting, whereas Punisher is more like just like, you know, he's a one man wrecking crew.
Right, right. I always kind of pictured it as like something, you know, in him when his family was murdered just broke. And he just had this line where he's like, if you're a criminal, you die, period. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go out and look for everyone that I can to kill, period.
Right. And at the end of the day, you're just a monster.
Yeah.
Like, you're just a bad dude at that point, and it stops being interesting for me, at least. I mean, obviously Punisher did very well as a comic for a very long time, so he had his audience.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I couldn't get into that. So when I saw the TV series of Punisher, I really went into it not expecting a whole lot. I only watched it because my girlfriend at the time wanted to see it. So I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And we got through the first two episodes, and we were hooked almost immediately.
Well, I mean, at that point, I assume you had already watched Daredevil Season 2, right?
Which
introduced him.
No, I hadn't. I had only seen Daredevil Season 1 when I first saw Punisher.
By this point, you've already watched it now, right?
Now I have, yes.
Okay, great, good. Yes,
now I have. But at the time that I first saw Punisher, no, I'd only seen Daredevil Season 1, and I loved Season 1 of Daredevil. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't gone ahead and seen Season 2 yet. So I was going to Punisher very blind, which, I mean, you know, the first episode does a pretty good job of recapping
everything that had happened. Right, right.
Yeah, how he became the Punisher and all that stuff. So what I actually really appreciate about this telling of the Punisher is how reluctant he is to be the Punisher. Like, in the first season, we get, you know, that whole first episode where he's just taking abuse and punishment, for lack of a better term. You know, he's really, you feel like at any moment he's just going to snap and murder this guy. And he really doesn't, you know, until the very end of the episode when he finally, you know, steps up and decides, okay, I got to do something here.
Right. No, yeah. You know, it's really interesting isn't the right word. But recently, the creator of the Punisher came out and made a comment about law enforcement and certain, you know, military personnel who actually go around and put the Punisher like emblem on themselves, and basically came out and was like, this, that you are taking the wrong message away from this. And what I think gets to me the most about that is that there were people who were doing that before this version of the Punisher came out. Like, this version of the Punisher is a lot more relatable, right?
Right.
Lost his family. I don't think that there's anyone who can't at least begin to understand that type of grief. Mm-hmm. And at least wanting the people who are responsible for that to pay, I think, is something that people understand, especially within this light, because it's not like he's just going out and killing everyone that he absolutely possibly can, right?
Right, and, right. No, and he actually has a line that talks about that in the beginning of the second season where he says, I gotta be honest with you, I was being a little old-fashioned. If you'd have been a dude, there's no way I would have stepped in.
Right, right. And, you know, that was actually one of the things that, because obviously by the end of season one, he finally wraps up, you know, being able to take out everyone who had anything to do with his family. At that point, his mission is essentially done. And I was really concerned going into season two how they were going to rope him back in. Were we finally going to see him as the Punisher? Because something that John Bernthal had said going into season one is that when season one starts, he's not the Punisher yet, right? And it's not until the end that he actually finally becomes the Punisher. And actually,
even though he has worn the costume and done the things, he hasn't really become the Punisher.
Right, right. And actually, he even has a line in season two where when someone, you know, figures out who he is and mentions it, he actually snaps and goes, that's not a name that I gave myself. That, you know, they gave me that name, basically. Which shows that even now, he's still reluctant to sort of embrace that or embrace what he is, which is another line he has where he says, just let me be what I'm supposed to be. But to see how they decided to do it, you know, where he's actually, as far as we're aware, from the end of season one to where season two starts, he's been leading a peaceful life. I mean, as far as we're aware, I mean, you know, he's driving around just doing what he does, trying to enjoy himself. And he actually, you know, in I believe it was episode two, where he's tying the girl to the bed, right? Where she wants to go, and he's just like, no. At that point, both me and my girlfriend were like pretty uncomfortable with it. Like, Frank, man, this isn't like this is starting to get weird now, man.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a sequence where you're like, this could take a bad turn at any minute, and it's going to turn into something that I don't want to see. But you're right. What I think is really interesting between season one and season two is kind of the juxtaposition of in the first season, he really doesn't want to be the Punisher. He's done his thing. He's just trying to get on and lead a life now. And in season two, what they're kind of playing with is, no, you really do want to be the Punisher. You're telling yourself that you don't want to be that. You're telling yourself, no, I want to just lead this normal life and try and have a chance at, you know, some sort of happiness.
Well, he always has another, at least in his head, another reason, you know, because we see what he's doing with this girl and we're like, all right, you're starting to cross a line now. But when you think about it, the bartender that he had met was probably the first time that he actually allowed himself to feel anything or have any sort of normalcy, right? And what ended up happening is that he, because of actions that he took, she got hurt, right?
Right.
And the reason he's treating the girl the way that he is, she's bait. He wants the people who hurt this lady to pay, and she was the way to get to that, you know? So even in his head, I think he's still finding ways to justify what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, you're right, because his thing at this point, is he's I'm trying to draw the parallel here almost to like Star Wars at this point, where, you know, you've got like Luke cutting himself off from the Force. This guy has cut himself completely off from emotion, basically, in the beginning of season two. And you're right, this bartender that he gets with is his first time where he allows himself any kind of, not, I mean, obviously sex, but just, you know, like
connection.
Joy or connection or empathy. And when he does that, it's like, it's fun to see, like, immediately all the other things that come with that for him start showing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, by the way, I'm only three or four episodes in.
Right.
I feel so bad for this bartender who is just like a single mom and is doing her best, and she takes a chance on some guy who treated her nicely.
That happens to be the Punisher.
I feel so bad for this character who I, like, I love. Like, I don't, like, Marvel always does a good job of making you care about characters. Mm-hmm. Like, they're very good at that. I don't know what it was about this single mother character that I just was drawn to, except maybe that her kid's like a Red Wings fan, I guess. That. But one thing that we always talk about with Marvel is the Marvel banter and how good they are at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we saw that really well with Frank here, who, when he wants to be, he can be extremely personable. Like, he's very good with Rex is the kid's name.
Yeah. Oh, you mean when he's walking down from their one night stand and the kid just happens to be in the living room and everyone feels that awkwardness.
Yes, it's super awkward. But the kid's, he's like, let me guess here. Or he's like, I could tell you I'm a Rangers fan. Are you? Yeah, I am. Your team sucks. Yes, they do.
Yeah. No,
It's like, you're wearing a Mrazek jersey. Your team sucks too, dude.
There's pieces of Frank that even though he is this shattered, broken character who cuts himself off, there is obviously still a piece of the old Frank in there. You know, whether he was the Marine or, you know, the brother, or whether he was the dad. And, you know, there's a few times throughout it too, especially with, you know, his co-star this time being a younger girl, there are a lot of times where that sort of, you know, dad side of him shines through a little bit. And, you know, I think with Rex and with his mom, that's the last time he really lets it come through, because you can even see in the way that John Bernthal portrays the character going forward, there are moments of pain when he actually lets that come through. I think the other thing that they don't do a perfect job of, but I think that it was one of the only ways that they could have done it, is you know, leaving Billy Russo alive, Jigsaw, I think was a great choice, because it gives Frank more stakes coming in to season two instead of just coming up with a brand new villain, which they do also have. But at least where I'm at right now, and I only have three episodes to go, those two storylines still stay a little disjointed. It's not terrible by any means. I still love the show. I still think they're doing a great job, and I'm not really sure how they could have converged them. But thus far, there is a little bit of disconnect between the two of them. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I am enjoying kind of the nebulous stories that we're having. That, you know, because we've seen Jigsaw now. Which, by the way, can we talk for a minute about how this portrayal of Jigsaw is the only good one I've ever seen? I know some people are real mad that he's wearing a mask instead of like showing his face, but this Jigsaw is interesting, at least. Like, there's something to him. I'm legitimately uncertain if he is all just putting on an act, or if he is, has no memory of what happened.
Think about how far physical flaws, I mean, really go, right? Like, all right, you have a fucked up face, so you're really ugly, and maybe that makes you really angry about it, but he was already pretty pissed off at Frank, so it's not like he needed more reason to be more evil towards Frank. And what this does when you screw up someone's head and you mess with their mind, to me, that's something that is infinitely more interesting. It's something that I think is more relatable, because everyone in their head in one way or another, you know, has flaws or has, you know, some fucked up thing that they can relate to in some way. And it now opens up for a lot more interesting dynamics. What does he remember? What does he forget? In his head, is he still friends with Frank? Is Frank's family still alive? Like, this allows for so many more different and interesting character beats going forward. Right. The way that they decided that the Jigsaw isn't his face, it's his mind, was one of the best choices they could have made for this season.
Absolutely. Like, this whole idea of piecing all together what happened, and just the knowledge of if he does piece it all together, that's going to be really bad. Like, you find yourself like, am I actually rooting for this guy to never get his memories back? Is that what I'm hoping happens? Like, it's a really weird, like, telling of the amnesia trope. Mm-hmm. This other villain, holier than thou man, what's his name?
He's actually referred to as John Pilgrim in the credits.
Right, not Mads Mikkelsen. It looks like him, though, doesn't it?
A little bit, like a cousin or a brother, maybe?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. He's interesting. My biggest complaint with him is I feel like I've seen his character in a Nostalgia Critic movie once. Like, the whole, like, when he's yelling at the one guy for, like, saying, oh my god, this technology is a miracle, and he's like, excuse me, what, don't you dare worship technology. I'm like, I feel like I've seen this character before somewhere, and I can't remember where I saw it, but
America.
yeah, you're right, that's fair. Mm-hmm. But so he, you know, he would be kind of the other, we've got the villain who's building, who's probably going to be our end of season villain in Jigsaw, and we've got
we have Frank's villain, and then we have Rachel's villain, basically. You know, they each have their own sort of issues that they're dealing with that are slowly going to collide. He's definitely very much the John Pilgrim, the sort of mysterious one. They're very slow and careful about revealing information about his past. But where I'm at, they're doing a very good job of it, and it's staying pretty interesting. And honestly, I'm not really sure who the end of the season villain is supposed to be or how they're going to wrap it all up. But yeah, that's about all I have on him. Is he's interesting the way that they're going about it. I think the one thing that I would have liked from it, because the fact that they're taking, you know, a straight white you know, Catholic man to put in as the villain, you know, if they're trying to say something, I wish they would have went a little bit further in saying it, because nothing about it feels out of the ordinary. Like you said, I feel like I've actually seen this villain somewhere before, right? You know,
right? Yeah, it's not like he's kind of like the villain from Deadpool 2, actually. Not the kid, but the guy.
Oh,
who runs
right, the guy who ran the thing. Right.
Right. Except, yeah, a bit more dangerous. Know what I mean? It's kind of like him. He's just, he happens to be a religious zealot, and he's definitely a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And that's really, you know, his 1A and 1B characteristics. That's it. So I do hope we get a little bit more out of him. Like, I don't want him just to be bad for being bad's sake. There has to be a little bit more to it, which is why, like, again, Jigsaw is very interesting. his motivation is kind of wholly unknown, at least at the beginning of this season. It's unknown to him. We know it, as the audience who's seen season one, but to him, he's got to kind of catch up with the audience, which is a really fun dynamic to watch play out. And I'm wondering if we're not going to see Frank become more of his own worst enemy this season. Okay, I know. So again, this is just what I know of the first couple episodes. So if you don't want to have spoilers for the first two episodes, you might want to switch over to something else until you watch them. But obviously, like Robbie was mentioning, you know, in the second episode he's got this girl, tied up in the motel room, and it's getting really, really uncomfortable. Like, he's always been very much, you know, the ends justify the means. That's the Punisher, but usually it's people who deserve it who's getting punished. And admittedly, I don't know if this girl doesn't deserve it. I really hate her. I mean, of all the characters who I do like on this show, I liked Rachel in the first season. I liked Bartender Lady in this season. I hate this girl. I'm like, would you just shut up and
Rachel
tell me
in the first season? Do you mean Agent Masani?
Yes.
No, Agent Masani was great in the first season, which, yes, obviously teenage girl, super annoying. Let's talk about Masani in this season so far, because
obsession has taken over.
I mean, yes, and I suppose I do get that to an extent, but I don't know. I don't know if it's the writing or if it's the way that the actress has decided to portray it, but there's something about Masani in the way that they're using her in this season that kind of makes me wish that, I don't know, they hadn't, or like, really, what role is she actually serving here?
Right, 'cause I liked that they immediately kind of like, all right, we need to get this whole, like, well, she can just bail Frank out of trouble. We need to get that off. Like, that cannot be.
Well, I think what bothers me the most is, you know, she's the agent in charge in New York City for the NSA. That's pretty high profile stuff, right? And especially after the cover up and whatnot, I feel like if she was going and seeing Jigsaw in the hospital every waking day that she possibly could and actually conversing with him, first of all, after the second or third time that happens, knowing that she was there when all this stuff went down, the doctor should have been like, absolutely fucking not.
Right.
There is no way that he is going to recover properly if you're in here. And what if you trigger some type of episode? You need to get out of here before I call someone and get you removed. So the fact that they allowed that to go on for a year really makes me kind of like, no, I don't know about that. You know, had she tried to go a few times, got banned or whatever, and then finds out that he gets loose, and then that triggers her obsession because it's like, I was right this whole time. He was holding something back. That might have felt a little bit better with me.
Yeah, I mean, because as far as I've seen is he's just, you know, he says he has no memory. He only has the nightmares.
And after a year of that, like, if he was going to escape on his own and he had his memory, he probably could have done it pretty quickly.
Right. He probably wouldn't have waited a year. And that's what's kind of fun about her is, you know, she's like, he's playing you all for fools. He's sitting here laughing at me. And it's like, your obsession is getting a little unhealthy. Like, it's not often in series where, like, the police agent boss is the one you end up sympathizing with, but I sat there like completely agreeing with her boss. Is like, you need to step away from this case and go do something else because you cannot keep doing this. And as the audience, usually in that scene as the audience, you're like, but wait, I know he's actually evil and she's actually right. And now we're left here like, no, he might have a point. You need to like get a hobby.
Well, they do a good job with, again, with Russo and Jigsaw, where they put him at the beginning of the season. You do kind of actually like we know that he's a shitbag. We know that he's the absolute worst of the worst. But if he can't remember any of the stuff that he did, he's just another dude who's suffering. And even though, yes, we know he's a bad guy, there is part of me that can't help but kind of start to feel sorry for him because we want him to suffer. But if he doesn't know why he's suffering, right, are we really getting what we want?
Right.
Or not even that, even from a selfish point of view, are we actually getting what we want?
Well, it's one of the interesting storylines that gets used every now and then, like Law and Order will play with it sometimes, where it's someone, you know, commits a heinous act and then has amnesia. And it's like, can I be held responsible for the things that I can't even remember doing? And you just like, the reason we empathize with it is because we can picture in our heads. Can you imagine waking up and being told you did this and not remembering it and then being held accountable for it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not sure I can picture like a worse hell in my mind. Cause it, like, as a, you just like, I'm a decent person. Why would I ever have done that? And now I have to like suffer for it. That's not
mm-hmm.
fair.
Mm-hmm. The one complaint that I have about tropes where you, where people forget stuff and then they suddenly remember. And, you know, this is something that, that I had mentioned when we were talking about Titans as well, when Starfire remembered, oh yeah, I actually want to kill Raven. And then she just mm-hmm. does it. Is that when these memories suddenly come back, it's not like you've just been reset to that default position. You understand why you did everything. You would also still have the feelings you've been feeling about
right.
how could I possibly do that? Right.
And right. And it goes back to like, do you remember the first Resident Evil movie when, the guy at the end, like he is like memories come back and he turns evil on a dime.
Yeah, exactly. Like they never show the conflict between realizing, okay, I guess I am an evil shitbag. But what about all that empathy I had been feeling for the rest of the episode, right? Like, mm-hmm. like one of the parts that I'm really looking forward to is when Jigsaw does remember why Frank is the way that he is towards him. Like, that should be a big moment, right? Mm-hmm. And to see how they handle that will actually be really exciting.
Okay, yeah, I mean, you're right. There's a lot that can be done with this. So, I mean, overall thoughts on Punisher season two, like first impressions, where are you at?
I'm definitely giving it pretty high marks at this point. And again, I am almost all the way through it. I have about three episodes to go. They've done a lot of really interesting stuff. I think that they've found ways to keep the story and what's happening natural without feeling like, you know, you use one of those giant cartoon hooks to pull Frank back into it. Why he's there and what he's doing all feels very natural. The only thing that I'm a little about is the way that they've decided to re-involve Agent Masani in the story. Mm-hmm. And the fact that John Pilgrim and Jigsaw, they feel like Rachel's enemy, Frank's enemy. And it's like, well, all right, we have to deal with this one, then we'll deal with the other one. And so it feels like there's two separate storylines kind of going on right now. Now, whether or not those converge at the finale, we'll see. But overall, I am still really liking it.
So, I mean, I guess we're of kind of similar minds. My overall feeling with season two is it's a lot more disjointed than season one. Season one was a very cohesive, linear story. Event A led to event B, led to event C. And we, you know, this time I feel like you're right. It's two separate forks that are going to converge at some point. And we're getting a story told to us in a different mindset. I don't have a problem with that per se. It's just kind of weird with given the context of the first season where we were very much following Frank's story. Overall, though, I give the first few episodes that I've seen. You know, I've seen up, I think I probably fell asleep during episode four or something like that. I'd say it's really good. I do like the way that they've brought Frank back into this. You're right. It's not like some ridiculous cartoon hook. You know, Nick Fury didn't show up and say, you know what? You got to be the Punisher again. Here's your suit. Instead, we've got, you know, a very real thing of Frank trying, or Pete, I guess it would be, trying to have some normalcy and have some, you know, emotion and connection in his life. And in doing so, he just kind of stumbles back into all the things that he was trying to get away from. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting telling of it. It's way better than any Punisher book that I've ever read.
Oh,
so
tell me about it. The last Punisher comic I remember reading, I think it was actually in Marvel Ultimate Timeline. And I just remember he's sitting in general population just in prison because he's a criminal too. And right. just decides, all right, now that I'm here, I'm just going to kill a bunch of dudes. And just starts killing people. And like, all right, Frank, you're going into solitary. And then that's where...
I love how they're reacting. Like, okay, Frank, solitary. You don't just get to start murdering a bunch of people.
Yeah,
like,
and then Nick Fury ends up busting him out to be part of his Black Avengers operation or something like that. So,
yeah. That's pretty rough.
Yeah.
So we do want to remind you guys, if you are listening on the podcast, you can also tune into this show live. We record Tuesdays at noon Eastern time. And we invite you to be active in the chat. Ask us questions. It doesn't necessarily have to be about the topic at hand. Anything comics or gaming culture, you can always ask. We're getting close to wrapping up for today, but if there's any questions in the chat, we'd be happy to take a few. And we could also talk a little bit of a preview of next week, too, because next week... Next week's going to be special, guys.
Yeah, buddy.
What's the best superhero movie you've ever seen?
Ooh, like what is my all-time favorite superhero movie?
Yeah, what's the best one you've ever seen?
You know, watching back through the MCU, it's I think I probably have to give it to the first Avengers movie. You know, it was the first time that we really saw something like that, especially on the big screen, attempted. And, you know, Marvel took their time. They did it right. And it was perfect. It was everything that I think anybody could have wanted it to be. You know, juxtapose that against the worst attempt at that, which is Justice League. And I think it's no contest.
Right. Well, we're going to be watching, or we're going to be talking about, the antithesis of Avengers, a story that no one wanted to see, that didn't take its time,
several stories.
Well paced or written. I mean, unfortunately, it is one story. It's just Alan Moore's an insane person who decided to write it as, yeah, like four stories in one. We just got to ask, what's the best movie you've ever seen and why is it Infinity War? All right. So I love Infinity War a lot, but I don't think it's the best, purely on the fact that, like, I think it was the best experience, but only given the context of all the movies that came before it versus the first Avengers, which as a movie, it stands alone. It stands up on its own better than I think Infinity War. Like, Infinity War is great, but if you hadn't watched any of the movies before it, you'd be like, what? Versus Avengers, the first one, where even without the movies that came before it, you could still pick up.
Plus, because, you know, we knew Endgame was coming in, and that a lot of those characters that were dusted, we knew had to come back because of contracts. I mean, as a single experience, yes, it was good. It was great. It was amazing. But there was a bit of kick that was taking out of it based on the fact that we know there's more to this story that we have to wait until next year to see.
Yeah, knowing it was going to be a two-parter almost detracted from it, even though, like, they tried the whole thing of, like, well, remember, because originally it was going to be a two-parter, and then they're like, no, now Avengers 4 is a completely separate thing.
They're two separate stories. There's a beginning and an end.
Infinity War, and you're like, I don't know about that. They're one long story, effectively. Mm-hmm, so, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hope you're ready to gear up for some time travel. I did see that the current running theory, I think, is that the villain will be 2012 Thanos. It makes sense, actually.
Yeah, like,
if they go back and try and stop it all, he can still be the villain because it's him in that era.
Right,
who hasn't done
right,
the snap yet.
Right.
Like, that's interesting, actually. It could work.
Yeah. Oh, time travel just seems so lazy.
It does. I just don't know what else you would do at this point.
I know, like, I know.
Like, I'll put it this way. No matter what, it's going to be a Deus Ex Machina. You don't get to bring back half of all life in the universe without it being a Deus Ex Machina ending.
Fine. That's fair. That's fair. But all right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there.
Real quick, Veroska on Twitch says, I know it's new, but Spider-Verse is the best superhero comic book inspired film ever made.
Spider-Verse was absolutely incredible.
There's an argument to be made for that being the case. As good as things like Infinity War and Avengers were, Spider-Verse did a lot of incredible things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely looking forward to... I think we do already have confirmation that they are planning on making more Spider-Verse movies. So
yeah,
definitely looking forward to that. Definitely looking forward to that. And obviously, I think when we both finish The Punisher, it might be worth coming back and talking about again as well. So definitely be on the lookout for that episode as well. But I do think that that's going to do it. That about puts us at our 30-minute timeline. So, Joe, it's all you. Go ahead and take them out of it.
All right. Well, make sure you guys tune in every Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern for Checkpoint XP Daily. We've got shows going on every day of the week. We've also got other programs for you guys to check out. We've got Dungeons & Dragons on Monday night. Soon we'll have Loathe at First Sight returning. We've got shows basically for every kind of gamer, so make sure you check those out. Follow us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for today. So, until next time, will Robbie and Joe finally talk about All-Star Superman? Will it actually be the best thing they've ever seen? Find out next week. Same Twitch time, same Twitch channel.
KeithUrbanCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.